Hi, everyone. Welcome to the B++ podcast, a podcast where we speak to leaders from around the world, leaders in technology, leaders in inspiring industries. And today I'm very happy to welcome all the way from Vancouver, Canada, Ruben Ugarte, who is a data expert. I mean, right. I mean, I've been planning to speak to a data expert for the longest time, right? So data is the new oil, they used to say, but now oil has actually been in the doldrums, or actually in the drums not coming out. Data is the new gold. I don't know. Gold's irrelevant now. Maybe we should say data is the new Bitcoin. So data is, you know, what the world needs right now. The more data is being churned out right now or being stored than ever before in history. So Ruben is a data expert. He's an expert in decision making. And he's also the author of The Data Mirage, Why Companies Fail to Actually Use Their Data. Very, very fascinating, because I can tell you the number of companies I've seen who've absolutely miserably failed at using their data. Ruben, welcome to the podcast. So happy to have you here.
Pleasure to be here. And I got to say, I love the analogy with data being the new Bitcoin. Very, I think, timely to the world we live in today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because that's, at least that wakes people up in terms of, you know, if we say data is the new oil, people are like, oh, I mean, oil's so irrelevant, right? So, I mean, before we jump into data, and of course, there's so much to talk about, but let's talk about you. How did you get started? I mean, how did Ruben decide one day that I'm going to be a data expert and I'm going to be writing a book about data? So what's the journey been like?
Yeah, well, you know, the story for me starts when I was 15 and I actually taught myself how to code. I was fascinated by this entire world of the internet and that you could have stores online. You know, this is, I don't know, 20 years ago. So e-commerce was very nascent. It's not what it is today.
Right.
But I taught myself how to code. I started taking on projects to build simple websites, simple apps. And at some point I said, you know what, I can't code all day long. I'm just not one of those guys. I can't stare at code all day long. I wish I could find something that was technical, but still mostly used by marketing teams, sales teams, and so on. And it turns out the data kind of fit that criteria. It is inherently very technical, the collection, the storage, even, you know, calculations and reports, basic statistics, right? But it's really primarily used by non-technical folks, marketing teams, sales teams, executives. So that allowed me to have a bit of both feet on two worlds. And that's really what got me to where I am today, you know, working with companies of all sizes and helping them really get more value out of their data.
Right. I mean, so let me also mention for the listeners. So Ruben is the founder of Practical Analytics, a company that can help your company. So if you're listening and you don't know what to do with your data, you can reach out to Ruben. And so, you know, Ruben, I think one of the things that, you know, I read you mentioned is that data can support decisions, but it should not, you know, direct them. You know, what do you mean by that? That's a very profound statement. And I, especially coming from somebody who's a data expert, I didn't expect that. So please do elaborate.
Yeah, you know, we've been hearing about data driven and being driven by data for a long time. That's sort of been the push, which is changing, by the way. If you look at some of the vendors in the space, they now talk about being data informed, for example. But look at COVID-19, perfect example. You know, we can all kind of argue that a year ago, governments didn't really have a lot of data to make decisions. They were all tough all around.
Right.
But, you know, we're a year later, and I would say most governments, most public health departments have a good sense as to how COVID spreads, what works, what doesn't. And we still see, you know, issues in how they handle lockdowns, how they handle restrictions. So what can happen to a lot of companies is they get paralyzed either by not having enough data. So, you know, they're not able to move because of the lack of data, or by having too much. You know, you'd be surprised how many conversations I have lately with executive teams that tell me we have way too much data. We have no idea where to focus, what to look at, what do we do? So to me, what the issue to me there is that I think companies place data at the center of everything. And they say, this is it. This is the most important thing. You know, we're going to be like Google and Facebook, and data is our product, and we're going to optimize around it. But they forgot that that's not really their goal. You know, for most companies, they're not going to be Google and Facebook. They really have to build better products, serve customers better, and data can help. but it's not the end all and be all.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've seen some organizations, you know, getting carried away with data as well. And in fact, you know, in one of our earlier episodes, I was speaking to this AI expert, and he mentioned, you know, that the company should focus on why they are doing what they are doing before jumping into AI. And, you know, again, AI being powered by data. And he also mentioned something about, you know, you can't have AI without IA, which is information architecture. And I thought that was quite fascinating as well. So, I mean, I'm glad that, you know, you brought this up. And, you know, so the company can definitely support their decisions, right, using data, but not really, you know, let data decide everything. You know, again, it's one of those very tricky things. And, but I'm glad you mentioned that, right? So now, you know, tell me, as a company, is there some kind of a filter? Is there some kind of an assessment? Is there some kind of a test where you say, when you work with so many companies, let's say a lot of our listeners are, you know, founders, some of them startup founders, some of them, you know, run very large corporations. So when is the right time, or is it always the right time? Can I, as a leader of an organization, assess whether we are ready to sort of leverage data for everything we are doing? Or does a company need to sort of take some steps, you know, maybe the way it captures data, maybe the way it sort of, you know, how do I know on my entrepreneurial journey as a startup founder, or as a, you know, as somebody who's running a corporation, that data can play a very, very important role?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I've done a lot of work with early stage companies, and it's some of the toughest work I do because they're not quite there yet.
Right.
So, you know, I can speak about, let's say, technology companies for a second. I would say that before product market fit, the amount of data you will be using will be quite minimal. And right. it will be much, much more qualitative than quantitative. That is,
right.
talking to customers, talking to users. You maybe have a few data points in front of you, but you're really much more interested in what this user, John Smith, what they're doing, who they are. And, you know, the best thing is really to talk to them as much as possible. Once you're past product market fit and you're starting to get to 20, 30 employees, you can really start to invest in how you collect data, whether it's product behavior data, customer data, user data.
Right.
This is where you can really start thinking about a data warehouse, a BI tool, all those kind of things. I think it also aligns well with what kind of resources you have. You know, I've seen companies that, let's say 100 people, that do not have any data analysts.
Right.
So that really limits what you can do at the end of the day. So right. the moment you can start to hire data analysts and invest in that, that's where you can also start building data. But, you know, it varies. You know, I'll tell you that e-commerce, for example, I find e-commerce companies can grow to $5, $10, $15, $20 million
right.
with very little data.
True.
Versus technology companies tend to invest quite heavily much sooner, you know, before they even get to $1 million. So it varies, but the main litmus test I would use for companies is, how is this really going to help you if you have it realistically? You know, is this really going to help you close your next round of funding, secure the growth targets? And do you have the capacity to invest in technology and people to really support that?
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great example of, you know, how it's so different for each industry, right? So for instance, and although I think eventually it becomes so critical for the survival of an e-commerce company, you know, every bit of data, whether it's product related data or user behavior data, but yeah, you can sort of move forward. So, I mean, for all of you listening in, and if you feel that, hey, we are not doing much with data, just see where you are, you know, along the journey, have some plans. And of course, you know, an important part, what Ruben mentioned, is also to get somebody who will be your data specialist in terms of an analyst or, you know, whoever it might be, because that's very important, because data is not going to get up one day and start talking to you unless you invest in it. So one of the things you mentioned very interestingly, Ruben, is qualitative versus quantitative data, right? So now that's an area of huge interest for me, because again, I'm not a data expert at all, but in the sense, what I've seen is, you know, there are definitely trends, you know, which show how important qualitative data is becoming. I mean, if you look at SAP's acquisition of Qualtrics, for instance, and, you know, at a valuation that was absolutely jaw-dropping. And so, I'm sure a decision that inspired hundreds of thousands of people to start building data companies. So how do you see, you know, do you see some shift, or do you just see that people have started paying more attention to qualitative data? I mean, you work with a lot of these companies. What are some of the trends that you are observing right now?
Yeah, I do see a little bit more emphasis on qualitative data. I would still say it's an uphill battle for the most part. You know, I think companies overvalue a little bit too much the quantitative numbers. They might be seen more objective. You know, you have a data point in front of you, right. You have a trend line. It's clear, you know, it's almost the same as it's facts eventually.
Right.
But, you know, I tell companies, you know, companies come to me and they say, you know what, here's a chart. You see this dip that happened here on, you know, Thursday. What happened? And I'm like, I don't know. it's not so much I can get from this chart. I can tell you it went down and it went back up.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to start digging in, and we might need some qualitative data, right? We might need to interview. Mm-hmm. We might need to apply some human knowledge and say, you know what, here's what's going on in the market, right? I work with a crypto company right now. And of course, their user growth swings wildly from day to day. But if you have no sort of qualitative knowledge, you would think, you know, this is crazy. But then you realize, you know what, Elon Musk tweeted about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And then this happened. And that's what's sort of driving it. So I think qualitative is really useful. And it's in some ways even more efficient sometimes. I think companies go down this huge rabbit hole where they're trying to dissect numbers and run very complex statistical analysis, when if they just talk to 5 or 10 customers, they will probably get a better answer. So I like that shifting, but I think companies still have a long way to go, because that ingrained expectation of it's mostly quantitative, let's get more numbers, let's run an AI model on it.
Right.
That is still a big shift, or a big part of, I think, data culture.
Sure. I mean, so what I'm hearing is that, you know, you can't just sort of completely neglect quantitative data. We are not there yet. I don't know if we'll ever be there. But the fact is, there is a definitely a focus towards, you know, qualitative data. So I think if your company today is heavily focused on, you know, quantitative data, then you can probably look at, you know, how you can sort of collect some qualitative data as well. So like some of the things that you mentioned just now may better explain, you know, certain patterns and some certain user behaviors. And yeah, of course, Elon Musk tweets are definitely things that swing markets for sure. I think the last announcement was that he does not want to sell his tweet as an NFT or whatever. It's just in such an interesting space anyway. So there's another podcast for NFTs, I think the hottest trend in town. So, I mean, you work a lot with companies, you know, with different stages. We talked about, you know, you spoke about the litmus test, but let's say, you know, companies are ready for it, right? So they are further along in their journey and they are ready for it. So what are some of the challenges that you see, you know, in terms of implementing a robust data strategy? What are some of the most common challenges? And maybe some of the listeners can immediately sort of relate to that as well.
Yeah. Let me give you three. And I'll tell you also what's not really a challenge. You know, data collection, for example, it's not really a challenge. Most companies, and I think the general trend, is that collecting data is getting easier and easier year by year.
Right.
So companies are going to have lots of data, different forms, and even collecting qualitative data, it's more of a question of, do you want to do it? Not so much, can you do it?
Right.
But the challenges companies should be really aware of, one, should be that there's a growing trend around this idea of data enablement.
Right.
It's basically just getting people to use the data. Mm-hmm. So you really want to be thinking about this and looking at how data is actually being used in the company. And you can look for some signs. You know, do you see this in weekly reports? Do you hear people talking about some basic numbers? Do you see this in, you know, quarterly reviews and things like that? So you want to really gauge how well your data is actually being used across the entire organization,
right,
from executives down to people at the front line. The second challenge, I would mention AI and really just the future of data, in the sense that what I don't think every company will benefit from AI, there's definitely a lot of possibilities in the world of automation and in using data to drive automation, right? We're seeing, for example, retailers going from less a model of, you know, selling through big stores to becoming direct to consumer. Even Nike, right? Historically sold through stores. Now they want to be much more direct to consumer, almost like the Shopify world.
Right.
And that requires data, requires automation. So that's, I think, a big thing companies want to be thinking about and saying, what are we doing to drive automation? How is data going to help us? Do we need AI? Where do we need to invest? And the third challenge becomes more about protecting the data integrity. Again, right. The collection is easy.
Yeah.
What I see companies sometimes run into, it's just lack of trust. You know, eventually numbers don't make sense. They may be wrong. They may not be. And they start to lose trust. And that could really derail this entire thing. Because you may have this fantastic infrastructure, you know, that takes data from point A to point B as quickly as possible.
Right.
And generates these beautiful reports. But if people don't trust it for whatever reason, then it's kind of all goes to waste. You're sort of dropping the ball, right? 5 yards away from a touchdown.
Yeah.
So I would think about those three challenges. How do you get people to use the data? What's the role of data in future initiatives like automation? And of course, how do you maintain trust in the data as you scale up?
Well, that's a great way you sort of crystallize this. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of other challenges as well, but like three really big challenges. And you know, we can talk for hours for each one of them. So, I mean, the one thing that I find really fascinating, and of course, you know, like you mentioned, it's important to figure out, you know, whether AI plays a role in your organization or not. And, you know, what does data mean for your organization? But how do you enable, right, like the data enablement that you talk about? Because let's talk about the first problem, right? So in the sense that how do you enable that in an organization? I mean, what's like the easiest way of doing that?
Yeah. So there's a few ways. I would say probably, I guess the easier way, or maybe the more direct way, is a form of training. Now, typically companies like to sort of grab people and put them in the room, right? 50 at a time, 100 at a time, and then train them on whatever, basic data concepts or how to use a BI tool, whatever it is.
Right.
I think that's okay. It's a part of it. I've seen a lot of benefit in doing or being able to schedule one-on-one trainings or maybe team specific trainings, having places where people can go for quick answers. For example, a lot of my clients will set up a channel just for data. Very simple idea, but it turns out to be very effective because people can post a report, a link, and say, hey, I can't make this work, what's going on here, what's going on there, and someone can reply in a bit of an ad hoc way. And then of course documentation. Being able to say, you know what, here are the main reports we care about. Here's the KPIs. And when we talk about retention, this is exactly what we mean.
Right.
Here are the tools that we have. Here's any training we made in the past. A central place.
Right.
So when new people join, you know, they don't have to learn this on their own. They have this resource they can go to. So I would take those four elements of training, if you want to call it that.
Sure.
And starts to run it in a company in a cyclical way, right? You might repeat every few months. And then you're just getting people comfortable with the data. You know what? And I would even say the format of the data is maybe not as important. There's a big trend now to have, you know, self-service data, right? Where people can build their own reports, their own dashboards. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But if you're not quite there yet, if you don't have the technology, you know, most people feel quite comfortable with Excel or whatever they might use. It's just a matter of how you're going to work with the data, how to do it quickly, how to do it in a way that doesn't take up a lot of time. And I think a lot of those ideas and concepts can be taught in a more sort of elaborate way within companies.
Sure. I mean, I think that's great. You know, training, a very important part of it. Again, and I like the fact that you mentioned that it could be like a recurring training as well, because, you know, it takes a long time to make anything a part of people's lives. The other thing you mentioned is very fascinating as well, the data format. I've seen some serious obsession with data format in a number of organizations. So I'm glad you mentioned that it's not that important. Of course, you know, it has its advantages, you know, different formats. And the third thing that you mentioned, I want to ask you a question regarding that, is you mentioned the tools, right? So as an entrepreneur, as somebody who wants to introduce, wants to introduce data, as a part of our everyday life, what are some of the tools that you would recommend? What are some of the tools that you've seen as the most effective that, different organizations can use? And of course, I'm sure, different tools would be relevant for different sizes and, purposes of organizations. But what are some of the tools that you could recommend that most entrepreneurs or, business owners or startup founders can sort of start checking out?
Yeah, the world of technology and tools is endless. I cannot keep track with everything that's in the space. But if I was thinking of a few categories, and in the book I talk about questions. That is, as you build stacks, you're really trying to answer questions. So you might have a question around marketing attribution and knowing where your marketing dollars are being spent. Great. What tools do we need to answer that question?
Right.
We might have a question around the sales process and how to optimize that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the questions that most companies have that they'll need to solve in some way, one is how to visualize data. And this can be as simple as Google Sheets, which has some basic charts. And it can be as advanced as Tableau, right? A very powerful BI tool.
Right.
So, but I would look for something that allows you to visualize data and that there's a good chance that people will learn how to use. So Tableau, for example, is very advanced.
Right.
It's not that user-friendly, but now you, of course, have BI tools that are quite user-friendly. Chartio, which actually just got acquired by Atlassian, kind of falls in the category, and Mo to some extent. So you don't need to know SQL.
Right.
It's kind of like drag and drop.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely something like that to give people the ability to build charts and reports on their own quickly.
Right.
I will also look for something on the qualitative side, if you go back to that. So this may be, again, something as simple as a survey tool. If you have a website or some kind of digital product, you're likely going to need something that does session recording and heat maps on the web or on mobile.
Right.
Or something that helps you understand qualitative data.
Right.
And I mentioned a point that I wanted to bring up earlier is, I think the key to qualitative data is to automate it. So that is, to collect survey responses and heat maps and sessions. So when you're ready to view it, when you have a question, it's there, instead of having to ramp up and send a survey and all that. And now we see that more with companies, right? Automated feedback forms, any of that. It doesn't matter, I think, of putting more effort into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, thanks for sharing. Sorry, go on.
I was gonna say, I guess the third category, which is also hot in the space, would be maybe something like a CDP, like a customer data platform.
Right.
We see companies like Segment, mParticle, MetaRouter, and I'm sure there's a few others.
Right.
And it's basically just a way to collect data through a single place and then route it to different places.
Mm-hmm.
I have found this to be quite helpful for companies because it helps you centralize how you track data,
right,
makes it easier to send it to new tools and try different things. So this kind of top layer makes it easier to work with data. So I would think about those three categories to start, visualizing, qualitative, and the CDP world as starting points.
Fantastic. Thanks for sort of giving such a clear path for, organizations who are still in early stages. I think visualization, gets things started. We work with a number of clients, very large companies, but I think they are still stuck at the first step in a way. I think there's a lot, and I'll come back to the opportunity, but I think it'll be a good time to ask you, what are some of the companies that you feel are doing a fabulous job of, maximizing their data? Because one of the things I find very, very useful is just finding companies that are doing it well and just trying to see if you can replicate some of the things that they are doing. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So yeah, let me give you a few examples, and I want to see if I can get some cross-industry examples.
Right.
So the first that comes to mind is Spotify.
Right.
The music streaming app. I use it every day, so I'm a bit of a power user, but I find their usage of data is very practical in the sense that, Spotify would generate playlists for you based on your tastes. I actually now come to think that a lot of what you see in Spotify is highly personalized to you. I think they have a few playlists, like their, you know, top 50 pop hits.
Yeah.
Where those are probably static. They're the same for everyone. But almost everything else I started to notice is very driven by your taste. And they have playlists like, you know, your top songs from 2020 or what's on repeat. So that to me is a fantastic usage of AI, which they're using, that actually helps the user and that's visible to the user. And that makes the product much easier to engage with because, you know, 10 years ago, we sort of had to build our own playlist one by one and drag the song into one. And Spotify has moved away from it. I would say Amazon also comes to mind, another big tech company, and it's just everything, right? From how they manage, you know, distribution, supply chains, recommendations, what they show you, what they don't show you. Just a massive player and clearly, you know, very, very good at what they do. Then there's, you know, there's a few other companies that come to mind. They might be a little smaller. Some other cross-industry examples. I've seen a few fitness companies that do a good job. I think Peloton, for example, has done a good job with content generation and how they think about content. I found that interesting in how they approach their classes and their sort of the hardware and software connection that they have. It's actually a company called Stitch that they do fashion design. And you, my understanding is that you sign up, they assign a stylist to you. And it's a combination of a stylist with AI to make recommendations on clothes and what kind of things you might like. And another company that has invested a lot in data, and you see it. In fact, they even have, I believe they have a chief data officer. So they have a dedicated executive just for data, which shows or their general commitment to using data. Those examples come to mind. You know, I would look at, and I think a lot of them in sort of different industries, you're not seeing the data. They're just, it's hidden, right? It's being used in automation and customer support. But when you do see it, when you see that personalization, you see those, that seamless experience between maybe offline and online, you can see a company that handles data well and is using it appropriately.
I mean, those are great examples, you know, and they're doing such a phenomenal job, and a lot of them, you know, affect our everyday lives and we don't even realize it. And I think sometimes the best use of data is when it's done so well and so subtly, right? So the example that you shared in terms of Spotify, it does not give me a feeling that, you know, it's intrusive. It's not, right? So in the sense, although it might be quite customized, but it's not, I've never once felt that it's intrusive at all, right? So I think sometimes that's a very, you know, effective way of doing that as well. So I have a couple of questions. You know, you mentioned, you know, the company using, you know, having a chief data officer. So I know we sort of touched upon it, but I mean, just to understand, do you think as a founder today, if you want to start a business, because we did talk about the fact that, let's say somebody already has a startup or somebody is already running a multi-billion dollar enterprise and they can see what they can do. Do you think there's a way, and you mentioned you work with early stage companies as well, that you say that I want to build a company which is absolutely based on data? Right. I mean, what I'm trying to say is, one is where you are in your journey. And sometimes it's so difficult to unlearn some of the behaviors as, you know, businesses, as companies, or you can say that, how do I sort of build a data first company? You know, have you seen some examples of that? Or do you have any insights that you could possibly share? Or do you think it's too much to ask? And I know it's a strange question, because we did talk about, you know, data should sort of support, and data should not absolutely direct the business. But in the sense that, you know, I think sometimes with business models, it's so difficult to sort of tweak them later. So is there a way that comes to mind that you feel that, you know, data would be at the very core of that business's existence?
Yeah, you know, and there's companies, of course, that do that. Google, Facebook, Amazon, like it to some extent. They sort of fit a category where they're really a data first company.
Right.
And everything else is just mostly there to support the data collection, right? You think of Google, everything's free for the most part. And it's all about just collecting data and then advertising.
Right.
So I do think there's definitely a role for that. And there's companies that are built with this mindset. I would say that if this is what you're building, and you know, I would look at any company out there that's, you know, offer machine learning models or build fundamentally on machine learning as probably a data first company. I think at this level, you effectively treat data as a product. So just like you might think, you know what, we have a product. We need to hire a product manager. We need to hire a product director or a CPO, a chief product officer. You think the same thing, right? We need a data scientist, someone who has the right academic background, and he's going to be, or she's going to be one of the founders. Or, you know, we're going to make a key data scientist role, you know, hire number 5 will be a data scientist.
Right.
That's I think what you would see in a data first company where all these key roles are being hired very early on, and they're shaping the product itself and how data is collected, how it's stored. And I met a few of those companies, and that model can work quite well. And you're right. For those companies, they'll grow into that model, and they'll always have data, you know, as a core part of the company. They'll be very advanced. Some of the things we talked about might never be an issue for them, right? Data enablement, trust, they might never have those issues. But it would mean that as a founder, you're making those hires very early on, and you're sort of talking with money, right? You're spending the 100, 150K, 200K a data scientist cost, and that's like hire number 4. So you're really committed to it.
Sure. I mean, that's fascinating because we were working on a product where data was the kind of product. I would say not the only product, but definitely one of the key products. And you know, we were going through that journey, and I think the way you sort of explained this probably tells me that we need to get a data scientist rather quickly for that, because you know, not many people on our, let's say, development team, or not a lot of other people could really see what could be done with that data as well, right? So I think you've given me some insights for me to work on as well. Thank you so much for that. And
Yeah,
so a couple of questions, you know, not about data, but about you as a founder of a company. So what do you see as some of the, you know, biggest challenges that you face, right? I mean, one of the reasons I'm asking this question is you mentioned, you know, getting $150,000 data scientists or something, right? Good people are so hard to come by these days. And, you know, so what are some of the biggest challenges that you are facing currently as an entrepreneur?
Well, you know, my practice is just myself. So I am a solo expert, and I do different things, right? I do consulting, coaching, speaking workshops. So for my kind of model, putting that into context, I would say some of the challenges, of course, learning how to structure my time and how to work with clients. You know, for example, my expertise is not really in data analysis, it's sort of the deep data analysis. I always bring people in for that. And my expertise is much more on the strategic side.
Right.
So being able to, you know, show up to clients and know that this is what I do. And if we need a data scientist or we need a data analyst,
right,
of course, I know people I can bring in. But being able to be really focused on what I do well, instead of sort of being stuck on things that I may do okay, I could probably do data analysis, but not as quickly, not as effective as really someone who's an expert in that.
Right.
The second thing is, of course, as a solo consultant, is really about support and trying to find that support network of people who do similar things.
Sure.
They may not be in data, of course. They may be in marketing or sales or operations, but people who understand where you're going and sort of build a community around that. You know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs will relate that it can be lonely, you know, always be working on your business and not having someone that you can actually talk about challenges in a way they understand, in a way they say, like, I know exactly what you're going through. Here's what we did, and so on.
Yeah.
And the third challenge is just, of course, how to stay interested, how to make it fun. I still, of course, tackle projects now that I've seen now 100 times, right? And I can almost predict what, you know, what the client's going to say about this specific issue because I just seen it so often. Yeah. And it's great, you know, so it's a great sort of outcome of expertise. But then I think there's also a balance of what you know well versus when you're trying to stretch yourself and you're trying to tackle things that may not be completely new. You know, I'm not walking in and doing surgery.
Yeah.
But something that is exciting and that will keep me interested in the work long term.
Yeah. Well, I think we need to start a support group for lonely entrepreneurs. You know, I can tell you, you can have 100 employees and, you know, you can still be, it's a lonely job, right? So yeah, I think we should work on that. Yeah. But thanks so much though for, you know, sort of transparently, you know, sharing, you know, of course it's easy. You mentioned, you know, the support teams that you work with, you know, so, again, one of the things that we try to help people with through this podcast is how do you get hold of, you know, some really good people, right? So I was speaking with somebody the other day, a founder in Australia, and he was talking about how he's working with people in Brazil and a lot of other places. And my first question was, how do you find them? And so he has shared some insights, you know. So I just wanted to understand from you, how are you going about this? How do you identify these support teams? Are these people you worked with in the past, or do you sort of find them in some other way? How does it work?
Yeah. So, you know, it's there's different experts that I'll work and bring in, whether they might be a BI expert or are they a scientist or something else.
Right.
I would say I find them in different ways. So referrals, of course, is a very strong way. You know, you know someone who you enjoy working with. They might know someone else.
Yeah.
Typically, also one of the most effective ways when you get to referrals. I have also taken advantage, of course, of the job marketplaces online, the sort of the Upworks of the world.
Right.
And actually, there's a couple that are data specific they just focus on data. MeasureMatch.com comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Clarity FM. If people are looking for data people. And those I find really great. The talent has to be higher, and I find it's a better pool to work from. And then on the working itself, I guess once you have candidates, how to choose among them. For the work I'm doing is a lot of contract work. Of course, I'm not bringing employees, but even when I help clients hire employees, I really like having employees go through some kind of tangible project or prospective employees go through a tangible project.
Right.
So we may, you know, you may go through your interview process, whatever that may be, but having a project that will be paid, of course, it's not unpaid work, but some kind of outcome or deliverable that we can gauge to see how this person works. You know, it might be building a report or analyzing this data set and telling me a few insights that you found. You know, we're talking 5-10 hours,
sure.
A few $100, maybe a couple of $1,000 in actual payment.
Right.
And that's how I tend to get sort of gauge how they will work, you know, because I'm looking at a few things. Of course, there's the quality of the work. You know, do they know what to do, how to do it? I think responsiveness is a big thing. I have worked with really talented people who are not responsive, and effectively the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
So I gauge sort of how quickly people responded, and I'm not expecting them to respond in 5 minutes.
Right.
But I do like when someone responds sort of consistently every 24 hours, every few hours, and they do it consistently.
Right.
I find you can sort of solve a lot of things when you have someone who's responsive.
Right.
And then, of course, you can look at things like deadlines. You know, if they tell you something will be done by Friday, was it done by Friday, or was it just ignored?
Yeah.
So through those things, through some trial and error, and of course working on real things, on real projects, real data in my case,
right.
I've been able to find people that I enjoy working with, and I know that I can bring them on to different projects as needed.
Sure. I mean, I think that's a great, you know, way of getting people on board. You know, like you mentioned, some of the brightest people lack some very basic discipline, and some, you know, people just don't have that level of professionalism that you're looking for. So it's very important, especially in a in a very remote working world, right, where you're working with people from around the world, it's not that, hey, I'm going to meet you at 11 and then we can discuss. So the point is now somebody's sitting in a different time zone, and you know, it's important that you find the right people. And thanks for sharing your insights. So coming back to the book, right? So I always find it very interesting when an entrepreneur writes a book, because, you know, it's a crazy job. You're working all the time, and you know, but there definitely comes a moment in an entrepreneur's life where you feel that I have learned enough that I'm ready to share with the world, right? So in the sense, and just me speaking with the clients is not going to do it. I want to share it with with the wider world. So what was that moment for you? What made you write the book? And then the title suggests, I mean, again, let me make an assumption that you were working with so many companies and you witnessed them failing over and over and over again. And then was it like, oh my God, I need to tell the world how not to fail. Was that how it came about, or was there a story behind it?
I think so. Yeah. You know what? The book process, the book just came out last month or this month, you know, in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
But the book process actually started back in 2019. So it's been about a year and a half from sort of the book proposal to the book actually being released.
Right.
I think so. You know, I think I was in so many conversations with prospects and clients where I thought, like, we're just doing, you know, this is the wrong approach. I know I'm a data expert, but what you need is less data. You just need to make decisions and find a way to do that with just the right amount of data.
Right.
So I think it just came over and over again that I thought, I think I could put this in a book. Something that is not seen in the space. I thought the space was very driven by technology and choosing the right vendors, where I thought, you know what, like, technology is the most straightforward part. Like, we could debate BI tools, of course.
Right.
But we're gonna find one, and it's gonna be great. It's gonna be good enough. What's really missing is sort of the people element and the process. You know, are your people really trained and able to use data? Do they know basic statistics? Can they make decisions with the data? And then what process do you have for turning all this raw data you're collecting, that you're drowning in, into insights? So I thought there was a book there. I thought there was something interesting that hasn't been written as much before, either just online or even in books. And that's where I decided to really understand how this process works. You know, what's the commercial book publishing process, the different steps, the timelines, and it just took a step by step. And the title, of course, as you can imagine, I realized, I think the back of the book kind of says this, right? That I didn't have to convince anyone of why data is important.
Yeah.
Someone already did that.
Yeah.
In some conference or in some event, someone already told you, and the executive is sold on why data is important. You don't need me to tell you that.
Yeah.
I was just here to tell you how to really get to that outcome and not get stuck in the many sort of pitfalls that can happen along the way. And I've seen companies happen, you know, or deal with, from very large companies to very small companies. And I thought the data mirage, this, you know, this thing that you're seeing in the desert, but when you get there, it's not really there. I thought that was a great analogy for what can happen with data at companies. And, you know, you look at AI, for example, which we spoke about, we're sort of in the tail end of this 10-year cycle, almost like a hype cycle about AI. You know, about 2010, AI was really big, much bigger than it is now.
Right.
And it was sort of like all the rage, like, this is where you have to be, this is the next frontier. And 10 years later, if you look at the surveys and what sort of different executives are saying, is that it hasn't fully materialized in what they expected. It hasn't completely failed, of course. There's a lot of different use cases for AI that work really well now.
Yeah.
Fraud, face detection, language learning, right? Be able to translate languages on the fly. But not every company, not every executive is fully sold, and they haven't really seen the returns on all the money they spent on AI. So to me, I was like, hey, there's this big gap. And I think a book can cover some of those gaps, because it's not the technology. There's something here that will always be a challenge, no matter how good the technology is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the hype train has now moved to the blockchain station. So you know, I mean, and you know, we are all fans of, you know, all of these technologies, right? But I mean, sometimes when you see the hype around some of these things, you're just wondering what's really going on, right? So
yeah.
And especially in the tweet world. So yeah, that's really interesting story, right? In the sense, I think the way you described it, nobody needs to be convinced how important data is, but it's just that the implementation or actually monetization or just, you know, making proper use of it. There are so many things that you need to do along the way. And yeah, just come and figure out. And so if you want to figure that out, you can reach out to Ruben and I'm sure he'll help you out with that. And before I let you go, Ruben, just one thing, and I always ask people for their prediction. And again, I'm not going to ask you, so what's the future of data, right? Don't worry. But, you know, so, I mean, if you have any predictions about it, yeah, why not? But I'm just saying that, you know, it's like, so for instance, my New Year prediction was Bitcoin's going to be 50,000. I know it's just a bizarre thing to say. And it was, right? So, and it was somewhere around 30 around New Year's Eve. So, I mean, just where do you see organizations are headed, you know, when it comes to data, in terms of, we spoke about qualitative data, we spoke about, you know, how you know, my favorite part of the conversation was, and you know, because we, I think what I try to do with this podcast is sort of give people an opportunity to sort of think differently. You know, you shared some really interesting platforms where people can go and find data scientists or data related professionals. You shared a lot about, you know, some of the companies that, you know, people can try and emulate. You mentioned companies which are built around data. So, you know, so what do you think are some of the most, you know, powerful trends that people should keep an eye out for? And what are some of those things that people can leverage in their entrepreneurial journey or for their organizations from a data point of view that you feel will make them very, very successful?
Got it. Okay. So what comes to mind right away? One, I would say the, you know, sort of the role of a CIO is basically dying. You know,
right.
I think leadership teams, executive teams in general, they cannot expect someone to be the only person who understands data and numbers and explains it to everyone else. I think now every executive from marketing to sales to operations, they need to have a really good grasp of basic statistics, how numbers work, how to use them, how to make sure their team is actually going through the data and finding insights, and how to be data proficient. And this is, you know, so I think a mass education project for a lot of companies to shift away and finally understand the technology that's driving them, especially now with so many remote companies.
Right.
The second trend is I do think the future area of data and not so much AI, perhaps automation, personalization, all those different things will become much bigger now. Digital channels in general, of course, are growing for almost every company. We're seeing hybrid models, right, between like retailers, offline sales and online sales. So data is going to help drive a lot of these initiatives. And for a lot of companies, if they do not have the capacity to personalize, to automate, to kind of leverage their data, they're going to be left behind. And, you know, we're going into what may be this amazing recovery globally, right? As sort of the world reopens. So I think a lot of these things will happen very quickly for companies. And if they don't have the capacity, it's going to be, a rough ride through what should be a very enjoyable experience, you know, with all this money is flooded, all the economies around the world.
Right. Yeah, so the K-shaped recovery, recovery is not only relevant for, you know, the wealthy and not so wealthy. I mean, based on what you're saying, that if you know, it can be a K-shaped recovery for organizations that are ready to deal with their data and then organizations that are not. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted you. Please go on.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, like I said, you know, we, of course, here in the U.S. passing this huge stimulus bill. Mm. But, of course, all this money is going globally, right? And most major countries around the world are doing something similar. So that's a lot of money going into all the economies around the world. And if you read newspapers now, you hear about manufacturers and airlines that cannot keep up with demand.
Right.
And I think this will be a continuous story where companies are getting caught flat-footed. And the third trend that I would just say in general is, I do think data will become much more omnipresent in our lives. It kind of already is, right? If you think about it, how many people have sort of Apple Watches, and they track steps, and they track sleep, and they track macros. I think the same thing will happen to companies where they're going to move away from just having this dashboard that they check every once in a while to having numbers all around them in ways that are much easily digestible. So in their email, in their Slack channel, in paper, in TVs, when people go back to offices, and data will just become this background to everything they do, but it'll be much more easy to digest. It's not going to be just this thing you do once a quarter to analyze performance.
Right.
It's, you're going to look at it in the same way as you track steps every day. You know, did I hit 1,000 steps? Am I on track? If not, what should I do? So I think that's really exciting. I think there's a lot of cool things that will happen in this world, and data will play a big role in all of them. And companies just need to be able to invest and know what resources they need to deploy to take advantage of these trends.
Absolutely. And I mean, like we said, data is the new Bitcoin. So if you think you missed that bus, please hop onto this one. There are a lot of opportunities there for companies, for individuals, you know, for entrepreneurs. If you are at that stage and if you're thinking what you should do next and what you should invest as a company, I think data is that thing. And of course, if you're a CIO, you can start working on your resume. So thank you so much, Ruben Ugarte. It was absolutely a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you all the best. I hope you can continue to influence and impact thousands of companies and millions of people globally. Thank you so much.